Chinese Communist Party doesn't seem to trust its own people to allow them to choose their own path for their souls.
The United States calls on China to stop its growing oppression of religion. It's Monday, April 1st. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, Vietnam's human rights in question. U.S. and North Korean negotiators cross paths in China. Chinese urbanization in the sea. A building humanitarian crisis fighting plastic pollution. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The United States is calling on China to stop what it calls its growing oppression of people of faith, noting the detention of a million ethnic Uyghur Muslims. VOA's diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain has the story from the State Department.
China is facing international condemnation for its mass detainment of ethnic Uyghurs and its crackdown on Tibetans and people of various faiths. Uyghurs and Tibetans have long sought to make people aware of their plight, including at this demonstration in Geneva late last year. China has brushed off the criticism, saying Uyghurs are in vocational education centers to stop the spread of religious extremism and a surge in terrorist attacks in the autonomous Muslim-majority region of Xinjiang. Omir Bekali says he is a survivor of a so-called Uyghur re-education camp before he fled to Turkey last year. He said the sole purpose of the camp was to strip him of his religious identity, and his only crime was being Muslim.
Having a beard is enough. Going to Friday prayers is enough. Reciting the funeral prayer is enough. Saying Salaamu Alaikum is enough. Everything can be a pretext.
The U.S. Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom, Sam Brownback, said churches are being destroyed and people's religious rights are being violated.
China is at war with faith, but it is a war they will not win. The Chinese Communist Party doesn't seem to trust its own people to allow them to choose their own path for their souls. There's over a billion people at stake here.
Brownback said the repression is worse since the Chinese Communist Party took control over religious issues. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo agrees.
This is, I think we use the word as words, historic human rights abuse, and we're working to convince the Chinese that this practice is abhorrent and ought to be stopped.
For Uyghurs and Tibetans separated from their families, increased pressure on China cannot come soon enough. Cindy Sain, VOA News, the State Department.
These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Thais protest cheating election commission. United States and China face off over 5G in Cambodia. UN watchdog blasts Vietnam over repression and abuses. The United States and North Korean officials cross paths in Beijing. Australia plans tougher laws for social media. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more when you visit Facebook at VOA Asia and also stop by the voanews.com website. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington, and we continue with VOA Asia. A UN watchdog group condemns what it says is Vietnam's repression of basic freedoms and gross violations of human rights, including torture and executions for crimes that breach international law. The UN Human Rights Committee, which monitors the implementation of the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, has examined the records of six countries, including Vietnam, during its latest session. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The Human Rights Committee has fulsome praise for Vietnam's economic achievements, but many criticisms regarding its abusive system of governance. It is worried by the dramatic increase in crackdowns against human rights defenders. Committee member Marsha Kran says human rights defenders are harassed, attacked, and held incommunicado in pretrial detention. She says some have received lengthy prison sentences on bogus charges, and some have been ill-treated in custody as well. Another area of concern is the reportedly high number of death sentences and executions in Vietnam. The committee has received reports that 85 people had been executed last year. Kran notes crimes against the state, drug-related crimes, economic and other crimes are punishable by death.
So the situation is that the number and the identities of persons sentenced to death are kept secret by the authorities, which means that it's possible for dissidents to be targeted and sentenced to death without due process. Others have died in custody, and we heard reports that these deaths are then reported by officials as suicide.
The panel of human rights experts is calling for a moratorium on the application of capital punishment or an abolition of the death penalty. The committee finds the Vietnamese government is making progress in passing new legislation. Kran tells VOA a number of laws have been passed that appear to be protective of human rights.
There's a new law on trafficking that prohibits forced labor. There's, in fact, in 2017, there was an amendment to the law on legal aid. So it expanded the list of persons who could access legal aid. There's also amendments to the Penal Code and the Criminal Procedure Code on the right to counsel at all stages of criminal proceedings.
Kran says the legal framework shows some signs of improvement on paper. Unfortunately, she notes, these laws are not being applied in practice. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Happening now in Asia, North Korea has called for an investigation into a raid on its embassy in Madrid in February. In its first official comment on the incident, the North's foreign ministry said in a statement published by the North's official KCNA news agency that the raid was a grave terrorist attack. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us as we begin a brand new week on VOA Asia. U.S. Special Representative for North Korea Stephen Biegun and North Korean official Ri Soo-young, chairman of the Foreign Affairs Committee of the Supreme People's Assembly, crossed paths in Beijing last week, sparking speculation that they may be holding a back-channel discussion after the breakdown of the Hanoi summit in February. On Tuesday, Biegun met with Chinese Vice Foreign Minister Kang Xuanyu, who is the special representative on the Korean Peninsula affairs, after his arrival in Beijing Monday. Ri stopped in the city Tuesday en route to Laos. Ken Goss is director of the International Affairs Group at the Center for Naval Analysis.
It would suggest to me that the possibility of U.S. And North Korea interactions may be back on the table, at least some sort of back channel, and that China may be providing the venue for this back channel discussion to be had.
However, Gary Samar, the White House coordinator for arms control and weapons of mass destruction during the Obama administration, suggested Biegun and Ri were simply both there at the same time. The United States wants China to enforce sanctions and to nudge Pyongyang into resuming talks with Washington, while North Korea wants China to relax sanctions enforcement. The Beijing visits by Washington and Pyongyang came after each side signaled discontent with the other's position. On March 22nd, Pyongyang withdrew its officials from the Inter-Korean Liaison Office in Kaesong. That came a day after the U.S. Treasury Department issued sanctions on two Chinese shipping companies that it claimed to have helped North Korea evade sanctions. Ken Goss says both the United States and North Korea have their specific ways of getting their point across to each other.
Sides here believe that they can get their point across by increasing pressure on the other side. The United States does it through sanctions. North Korea does it through threats and aggressive behavior.
Dennis Wilder, the National Security Council's senior director for East Asia Affairs during the George W. Bush administration, thinks China cautioned North Korea not to go back to a provocative posture.
I think that the Chinese are telling them to be careful with the Trump administration. They're telling them to not to provoke. And I think the North has to listen to that because of the economic lever that the Chinese have over the North Koreans.
Samore thinks Trump attempting to reverse sanctions and Kim sending back his staff demonstrated that they each want to keep communication open.
Both Kim Jong-un and Trump want to preserve the diplomatic process they have begun. And, you know, both sides are showing, you know, signs of unhappiness and trying to create a situation to strengthen their bargaining position. But at the end of the day, neither side wants this process to collapse, which would mean resumption of testing and resumption of joint USROK exercises.
Dennis Wilder says he thinks a tweet by President Trump suggests his penchant for maximum pressure against North Korea has lessened, even though that may run counter to hardliners within the administration. After Trump's tweet, White House spokesperson Sarah Huckabee Sanders said President Trump likes Chairman Kim, and he doesn't think these sanctions will be necessary. Ken Goss, director of the International Affairs Group at the Center for Naval Analysis, says there appears to be conflicting opinions of approach within the administration.
I think there are elements within the U.S. administration that would prefer to back away from the diplomacy angle and focus more on the sanctions and maximum pressure. In the hopes, again, of trying to drive North Korea back to the negotiating table in a kind of a weakened position. And I'm not necessarily sure that President Trump sees it that way. He is worried that North Korea will go back to its testing its missiles and being very aggressive, and that would completely undermine any sort of foreign policy victory that he could claim.
Our thanks to VOA's Christy Lee for contributing this story, and you'll find much more at voanews.com. Coming up, a growing city you've likely never visited. You're listening to VOA Asia.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This news from VOA Asia, a small group of demonstrators protested in the Thai capital Sunday, accusing the Election Commission of delaying and manipulating results of last week's poll. The true outcome of the country's first election since the 2014 coup may not become clear before May 9th, when the Election Commission plans to release official results. Visit VOA Asia Facebook for more. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, a planned expansion of the biggest city in the once but all uninhabitable South China Sea will strengthen China's control over the waterway despite rival claims by five governments. The city of Sansha, anchored by a tiny tropical islet of the Chinese mainland, will, quote, obtain new breakthroughs in infrastructure, environmental protection, people's livelihoods, and integration of the military, according to the Municipal Communist Party Secretary Zhang Jun on the city's website. A population today of about 1,500 makes Sansha the largest city in the South China Sea and helps China control the whole Paracel archipelago. Taiwan and Vietnam also claim the Paracels. The Chinese government spars over sovereignty in parts of the South China Sea's Spratly Islands with Taiwan, Vietnam, Brunei, Malaysia, and the Philippines. Oe Sun, senior fellow at the Singapore Institute of International Affairs, says expansion of Sansha would bolster China's military and research advantages in the disputed 3.5 million square kilometer sea, in turn making its sovereignty claim more convincing.
to strengthen your case under international law that you exercise sovereignty over a stretch of land or sea. You would have to show that you have administration. You would have to show that there are people actually living there and then they are making a livelihood, for example.
Today, the city centered on Woody Island covers 10 square kilometers. That's enough for a hospital, a bank branch, and stores. Gregory Poling, director of the Asia Maritime Transparency Initiative under the Washington-based research organization Center for Strategic and International Studies, says Sancha has the role as both a military and civilian basing and logistics hub. A bigger city will let China expand ocean research at nearby islands, reinforce military installations, and develop tourism, analysts believe. Woody Island is already pivotal to Chinese military power in the resource-rich sea, according to CSIS. The island now supports an air base, early warning radar facilities, and a surface-to-air missile system. The other claimant countries lack China's military strength. Chinese officials cite historic documents to back their claim of about 90% of the sea, which stretches from Hong Kong to the island of Borneo. China and the five other governments that claim sovereignty value over the sea for its fisheries, shipping lanes, and energy reserves under the seabed. Growth of the city will give China a track record of administration over the islands, says Stephen Nagy, senior associate politics and international studies professor at International Christian University in Tokyo.
What we're seeing is China trying to build a case that fits in within the context of international law, and it erodes away the claims of other claimants within the region. It has the unique capacity based on its ability to build infrastructure in ways that Vietnam and Philippines and other claimants in the South China Sea can't do.
China lost a world arbitration court ruling to the Philippines over the disputed sea in 2016 because the court disagreed with the legal basis for its maritime claims. While it is thought other countries will probably say little, Trung Nguyen, International Relations Dean at Ho Chi Minh University of Social Sciences and Humanities, says Vietnam might just repeat verbal assertions of its claims to the South China Sea and possibly turn to foreign powers, including Western European countries, for help.
They will be waiting for goodwill behavior from China. I think that if China keeps pushing forward with their territorial expansions in the South China Sea, Vietnamese leaders, especially those who still are China-friendly, will realize that they have to find another way to counter against China.
Since the 2016 arbitration court ruling, China has kept peaceful ties with most other maritime claimants by offering them economic support. Our thanks to Ralph Jennings in Taipei for contributing this story. This news from VOA Asia. Social media executives could spend up to 3 years in prison, and their firms fine 10% of their turnover if they fail to quickly remove violent material from their platforms, according to a new law proposed by the Australian government. The move stems from the March 15th massacre in Christchurch, New Zealand. Make VOA Asia Facebook your social media destination. This is VOA Asia. Now in VOA Asia, the humanitarian crisis at the U.S. border with Mexico has many forms. Weeks of waiting in Mexico for a chance to ask for asylum, the reported horrors of detention, and lately being returned to Mexico to wait weeks in a crowded shelter for a day in immigration court. Others, mostly families with children who by law cannot be held indefinitely in detention, are freed into the United States to wait for court dates. But now a California county is overrun with migrant families who are setting up camp at bus stops and on street corners. San Diego County says it can't handle the influx, and its board of supervisors voted to sue the Trump administration for relief. Christiana Shevchenko has the story, narrated by Anna Rice.
Located on the Mexican border, the city of San Diego serves as a checkpoint for Central American migrants who come to the U.S. in search of a better, safer life.
These are all my things, clothes and documents.
This woman did not want her name used. With just one bag and four young children, she traveled 5,000 kilometers from Honduras through Guatemala and Mexico to the U.S. border where she applied for asylum.
I decided to come to the U.S. after a gang stormed into our house in Honduras and raped me and my 13-year-old daughter.
After family asylum seekers cross the U.S. border, they are transferred to immigration detention centers. When their papers are processed, they are released in the U.S. with an electronic bracelet attached to an ankle and no guidance about what to do next. This woman and her kids got lucky. A human rights organization helped them.
So this is our main dormitory, and we've been getting a lot of people every day.
This is the only short-term shelter for asylum seekers in San Diego. Immigration officials used to help migrants unite with relatives and get transportation while their cases were being reviewed, but they stopped in October 2018.
Once the program ended, then they started releasing these people by the Greyhound stations. They would just point, they would dump them on the streets.
Well, I just think it's really sad what's going on, and I wanted to, you know, help out. These people need help, so here I am making heating up tortillas.
While volunteers finish making dinner, a long line forms near the canteen doors. Almost all adults have kids with them. In addition to hot meals, they get medical help and moral support. Volunteers also help with bus tickets and transportation.
We arrange for them the travel and also transportation from here to their bus or airplane.
Since October 2018, more than 250,000 migrants have been admitted to the U.S. across the southern U.S. border, twice as many as the year before. Shelters are overpopulated. San Diego authorities promised to find a larger shelter and voted to sue the Trump administration for mishandling the migrant crisis. The influx is so large, ICE officers say, they only have resources to register the newcomers.
We're getting about 100 up to 200 people a day, individuals from family groups, that are being released in the community pending their immigration hearing. And so because of the increases, that's why we can no longer spend any time assisting with what we call getting to the final destinations.
Only 10% of migrants from Central America are eventually granted asylum, says Archambault. The rest either go back to the country they fled or continue living in the U.S. illegally. For Christina Shevchenko in San Diego, California, Anna Rice, VOA News.
As plastic pollution continues to get worse, a number of people and countries are trying to fight the problem piece by piece. From Africa to South America, homegrown efforts to collect and dispose of plastics are making a small but increasing impact. Kevin Enix reports.
In Gabon, it's an army of volunteers that meets every 2 weeks to clean up Libreville's beaches. The Network for Environment and Development is a charity group of 300 who want to help turn Libreville's beaches into a tourist destination.
On est nombreux.
There are many volunteers. We all work well together. We don't pay anyone. We are an NGO. We don't have the means. But when there's a possibility to pay, we give them at least $170. So we organize a little competition to encourage the volunteers, but also motivate those who are considering joining.
Right now, the waste is taken to a dump. But the group's leader, Edu Hoff, says he's working to recycle his garbage, not just get it off the beach.
We work with waste collection companies to get rid of the waste and now want to focus on recycling plastic waste because it represents an opportunity for us. So we're looking for partnerships so that in 2 or 3 months we can start recycling plastic waste.
The plastic even reaches here, to the uninhabited islands of the Galapagos, off the coast of Ecuador. Nestled among the cormorants and the sea lions, volunteers ride out to these islands to pick up some of the estimated 6 billion pounds of garbage dumped into the ocean every year.
We have thrown so much garbage into the sea, and it reaches coasts where there are not even people, but there's already garbage. It's very sad to see animals that have died, see nests of birds that are mixed with garbage.
And in Nigeria, a company called WeCyclers is keeping that plastic from ever reaching the ocean. The company collects plastic waste from Lagos residents in return for points redeemable in cash, food, or household items at local shops. It's a growing market.
There's so many people that are here that are generating plastic. Over the years, as we grow as a country, we're only going to do that. And also, at the same time, our demand for plastic is going to also increase. So at WeCyclers, we're hoping for a day where we're going to have a circular economy, where the waste that we generate is recycled and used to create new packaging.
The world produces an estimated 300 million tons of plastic every year. It's a problem that's not going away for thousands of years. But these volunteers are trying to help, piece by piece. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us on the internet. Of course, VOA Asia Facebook is a great place to go to hear our programs. And we're also heard on another Facebook page in Myanmar via VOA Burmese. We thank everyone there who's listened to our program today. We also like to thank our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Zeynep Abdel-Rahman, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Have a terrific day.